Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I like tacos.
I do too. We have so much in common. My name is Patrick Madrid, and I do like tacos. My number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. If you want to send me an email, only 51 came in since the show yesterday to this morning. Just 51 of them. And I appreciate them all. Just go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, and click on connect, and you can send me an email there. This one just came in. I try to dig through the backlog, but this one literally just came in the last few moments. This is from Roberta. She says, good morning, Patrick and Cyrus. You're going to like this, Cyrus. Quick note of gratitude for making the Inquisition book available in Canada. We need it, and I am busy sharing the link with all my family and friends. Thank you for that, Roberta. Thank you for your ministry at Relevant Radio, she says. You are both very kind and considerate in your interactions with all your listeners. Your banter and music selections are delightful. The show makes me laugh out loud and makes me think deeply. I just love trying to keep up with the mental gymnastics. It's better than coffee in the early morning. God bless you both and everyone at Relevant Radio. Big hugs. Roberta in Alberta, Canada. How do you like that, Cyrus?
I like those apples. That's nice. Thank you.
Yeah. Super nice. Thank you. Thank you, Roberta. I almost said Alberta. Thank you, Roberta in Alberta. And thank you especially for sending the link out. And the link that Roberta's talking about is the link to get a free copy of my new book called Inquisition. It's a book of quizzes. It's a lot of fun. I think you're going to enjoy the celebrity match that we're going to have later in the show today. Josh Raymond and Cale Clark. They're now calling in the Canadian kid. We'll see about that. And they're going to do a match, battling it out for some Inquisition questions from the book. But as for you yourself, if you want to get a free copy of the book, just go to relevantradio.com/quiz. That's the link that Roberta is referring to. She's sending it out hand over fist to all of her friends and family throughout Canada. And yes, we do send books to Canada. So please avail yourself of this free book. They had a huge print run and about half of it is gone now, last I heard. And they're going very quickly, so it's only been out for a week now. So it's not going to last a whole lot longer, and you don't want to miss out. And when I say free, I really mean it. You don't pay any shipping, you don't pay handling, you don't pay for anything. There's $0 or cents transacted. You just simply go to relevantradio.com/quiz and say, here's my name, here's the address, send me my free book, and we will. So thank you, Roberta. That's very nice.
Yeah, and don't miss Celebrity Inquisition today, 10:30, Cale and Josh. This is the first time we've ever done it, so it'll be a lot of fun, and there's a lot of opportunity for me to mess up with the sounds because we haven't practiced, so that could be fun too.
Sounds like a garage band.
Don't miss it.
Yeah. Thanks, Cyrus. Looking forward to that very much. So this is a note that comes in from Kevin, and he says, he has two questions. He says, about a year ago, I was able to slow down a young mentee, not a manatee, a mentee, someone he's mentoring, a sincere Catholic, and convince her to move back from a young man she was falling for since he was not Catholic. She did. And this past spring, he completed RCIA. He converted to the Catholic Church from Jehovah's Witnesses, and they're moving toward marriage. A few months ago, they invited me to attend Mass with them and his family, trying to make them feel a little more comfortable at their first Mass. I made a humorous reference to warming up for the Catholic calisthenics. In retrospect, I wonder if this was wrong in the order of Oh My God or OMG, which I've until just now eliminated from my vocabulary after hearing your thoughts. I'll pause there. Okay, fair enough, Kevin, and I understand what you mean. By Catholic calisthenics, you're talking about at this part of the Mass, we sit, then we stand, then we sit, then we kneel, then we stand, then we sit, then we kneel. And I have heard people, you know, in a lighthearted way, refer to that as Catholic calisthenics. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think you were just trying to put them at their ease, and it's a little bit of self-deprecating humor. And perhaps after Mass, if you didn't do it already, you could just say, here's what I meant by that. For people who are not accustomed to being at Mass, and they're not accustomed to seeing how at certain parts of the Mass, we stand, we sit, etc., That was a little tongue-in-cheek. I don't think you did anything wrong, and I certainly would not classify it as anything remotely approaching using the Lord's name in vain. And I'd like to say I feel very pleased and very happy that by listening to the program that you have revised your own way of approaching this issue of taking the Lord's name in vain. So that makes me happy, and I'm glad to hear that you've made that change. And I'm glad to know that you didn't do it for me, you did it for God, of course. His second question, another young person within my sphere of influence has three children with a Catholic man she's not married to. It seems they both want to get married in the church, but keep finding reasons to delay. She invited me to attend a midweek prayer group, which is followed by a mass. I was both pleased and saddened when I noticed that she did not go up to receive communion. I believe I can convince them of the importance of getting married. I was curious about one thing, though. In the meantime, years ago, a priest emphasized the importance of approaching for a blessing if you're unable to receive communion for whatever reason, and to signify that intent by crossing your arms across your chest. He was of the charismatic persuasion, and it seems some of what I learned from him is not necessarily wrong, but not needed. I've never seen anyone else do this, so I wanted to confirm if this is appropriate before I suggest it to this young person and others. Thank you, Kevin. And Kevin's writing from Florida. Thank you, Kevin. First, it is actually good that she's not going forward to receive communion because it indicates that she realizes that she's living in the state of serious sin. So I'm happy to hear that she's moving in the right direction, and that's good, but she's not ready to receive communion yet. So perhaps the next time you talk to her, you could say, you know, you could fix this problem. It's not an insurmountable problem. You have three children with a man that you're not married to. You're living together, and you're obviously doing the things that married people tend to do. So if you wanted to be able to receive communion, go to confession, make a good confession, confess everything since your last good confession, however long ago that may have been. And that means don't hold anything back. If you are embarrassed by one or more sins and you say, well, I'll tell all the other sins, but I'm not going to tell this one because I'm embarrassed. Well, you just made a bad confession. And it actually incurs yet another sin. This is the sin of sacrilege. You don't want to do that. So in order to receive the benefit of the sacrament, and I know you know all this, Kevin, but I'm just saying here's what I might say to her if I were in your situation. In order to receive the benefit of the sacrament, in order to receive the spiritual fruitfulness and the graces that go with the sacrament and the healing and the absolution that the priest gives you, in order for all that to take hold in you, you have to tell all of your serious sins that you can remember, number and kind, number and kind. What kind of sin was it? How many times did it happen? As best you can remember. Be truly sorry for your sins and have a firm purpose of amendment, which leads to the second part of this point here. And that is stop either living with this man, you and the kids get an apartment and he stays where he is, or he gets an apartment and you stay where you are. But in order for you to have this firm purpose of amendment, what it means is that you don't want to fall back into that same sin again. So if that's impossible, and sometimes, as odd as it may sound, it might be impossible for a couple to live under two different roofs, well, in that case, there's another remedy, and that is you simply live as brother and sister. And so you no longer do that thing you do that's causing you to be in serious sin. And if you just say, well, we're not going to do that anymore until and unless we get married, then you're on the road to where you want to be, which is in united with the Lord. So I would offer her the solution, Kevin. You know, here's a solution. Here's an open door you can walk through to move closer to the Lord. Let's go to Margie in Philadelphia. Hi, Margie.
Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
I knew I was going to cry. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
My dad died about a week ago, and we were listening to you guys every morning, and I'm just starting. Actually, I've lost faith in God. He took my mom about 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad and I have grown really close, and now he's taken my dad, and I just feel like I'm all alone, and that God just doesn't care. Mm-hmm.
He cares.
My brothers.
Well, let me offer a few thoughts, Margie. And I understand how this kind of trauma of losing a family member can be so hard and can make you wonder, Lord, if you really love me, why, you know, if you're really there, why did you allow this to happen? But here are some things to remember. Number one, all of us have to die at some point. We'll all have to die at some point. Okay. So it's not as though God is picking on you. I know it feels different, but let me just offer a thought that's different from how you feel. It's not that God is picking on you or that God is, that he doesn't care about your feelings. He does. He loves you. But part of the fall of Adam and Eve is the reality of death. That wasn't God's original plan for us, as you know. And so part of the suffering, we call this the veil of tears, and for a good reason, because we mourn at the passing of loved ones and we experience pain and suffering along the way. It's part of, you might say, the punishments that are incurred to Adam and Eve and what they lost for us. But here's the silver lining, or the golden lining, better, is that Jesus came, as you know, to die on the cross for us, and he conquered death. And by that, it doesn't mean that you and I won't die physically, but we will be resurrected to glory. And so as you're mourning the loss of your father, I can only imagine how painful that must be, Margie. And you're right to mourn, and you're right to cry, and you're right to experience all these emotions that you're going through right now. There's nothing wrong with that. But remember that your mom and dad, I'm assuming they loved Jesus. They were Catholic, right? They went to communion?
Yeah.
Okay. So just think of it this way, Margie. Think of the blessing that your mom and dad have received from the Lord. They are now either in heaven now, but do keep praying for them, or they will be in heaven soon enough. So they will be resurrected to glory, and they will see God face to face, and they will be blissfully happy in that land of the living, where all the tears will be wiped away. And that's where you and I are headed too. We're headed in that direction as well. So as you're grieving and as you're feeling these natural experiences, the pain and all of the emotions that are natural, just remember that God has something better than this life that he's now called your parents to. And so there's a kind of joy that you can have in the midst of your suffering and knowing and trusting in God's mercy, knowing that your parents are going to be so much happier, even though you're not happy right now. Think of the happiness that they're experiencing. And they wouldn't be experiencing it if they had stayed here, you know?
And I thank God for that. And I thank God that he's not in pain anymore.
Right.
And you mentioned the veil. My dad was very Catholic. He went to church every day. Mm-hmm. And there was a nun, and she made him a veil that apparently the undertaker told him, or told my brothers, that she'd only made five that he had known of, that they put over his face. I wasn't there when they had closed the coffin. But apparently that's a very special thing.
Yeah. See, Margie, there's a lot that you're going to naturally go through in the grieving process. It's inevitable. I mean, it's just, there's no way around it. And we all grieve in different ways, but in your grief, remember that God loves you. God loves your mom and dad. He has eternity prepared. Remember what Jesus said? He said, what St. Paul said, he says, eye has not seen nor has ear heard those things that God has prepared for those who love him. And your mom and dad loved him, loved him, loved him, loved him, like you do. So he's called them to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I did.
You know? So don't lose your faith in God. He loves you. He's going to bring you there as well in due
yeah.
time. Pray for your mom and dad.
And I do thank God for taking him. I mean, he had cancer. And I do thank God for taking him out of his pain.
Yes.
But I guess I'm being selfish, and I just miss him. That's all. It's just
understandable.
It's just so hard.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Well, Margie, I know, and like I said, this may not make it completely better, but you got a friend in me, and I'll be here for you every day. Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, because like I said, we used to listen to you every morning.
Thank you. We'll be praying for you and for the repose of the soul of your mom and dad, Margie. God bless you. I'll be right back.
For more of The Patrick Madrid Show, visit relevantradio.com/Patrick.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code PATRICK for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
All right. One more little gremlin got through this morning. Sorry about that. I think we've got the problem fixed. Thank you for your patience. Let's get back to the phones. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Tracy now in Loveland, Colorado. Good morning, Tracy.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. Thank you. Love your show. Love what you do. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ordered up my free copy already, so thank you for making stuff accessible to folks.
Wonderful. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you. Yeah, looking forward to receiving that. I am a non-Catholic, but I'm a regular listener to your show. And attending Mass. And one thing I've noticed, and just want to see if you could clear it up. I know when Jesus did the Last Supper, he had the body and the wine, the bread. And but in Catholic Mass, at least the ones that, if I remember right, the priest will drink wine and they pass out the bread to the parishioners. So I didn't know, why is that? Is that the case in all Catholic churches? And what's the reason that they do it that way?
Okay. That's a great question. Well, first of all, thank you for, you know, being on the journey and listening to the program and thinking about these things. I'm happy to hear that. And I'm here to help however I can, Tracy. So please remember that. There are two things I think we need to talk about here. One is that at the Mass, it is appropriate, of course, for the priest to receive under both kinds, because he's at the altar doing what Jesus said at the Last Supper to the apostles to do. He says, do this in memory of me. And it was at the Last Supper that Jesus ordained, so to speak, these 12 apostles to the priesthood. And so it's important and necessary for them to receive under both kinds. It's not necessary for anyone else to receive under both kinds. And that's a Catholic phrase, by the way, under both kinds. What that means is both the Eucharistic bread, the host that has become the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus under the appearance of bread, as well as what we call the precious blood, which formerly was wine at the beginning of Mass. And then when the priest says the words of consecration, the miracle of transubstantiation takes place. And although it still looks and tastes like wine, it is now the reality of Jesus' resurrected, glorified body, blood, soul, and divinity. And the reason it's not necessary for the Catholic layperson to receive under both kinds is because when you receive either one or the other, you receive all of Jesus. You receive Jesus' glorified, resurrected body, blood, soul, and divinity if you have the slightest sip of the precious blood, or if you have a small piece of the host, either way. So quantity does not matter in this case. And this is something that historically, at least in the Latin rite of the church, the custom was not, for lay people not to receive under both kinds. There were some practical reasons for it. One theological reason for it was that if lay people, as has happened in the last, say, 40, 50 years since the Second Vatican Council, if lay people become accustomed to receiving both, very often not being well-formed, they can fall into a heresy known as utraquism, which is just a Latin word which means both and. We could translate it that way into English. This heresy entails this idea that unless you receive both and, you're not getting all of Jesus. And quite frankly, there are many people who do tend to sort of fall into that mild heresy. And so one of the practical reasons historically was so that that wouldn't happen. So people would understand when you receive even the host alone or the precious blood, but in this case, the host, you're receiving all of Jesus. Now, the second thing to talk about here is COVID. So in this country, certainly in the years since Vatican II, which ended in the mid-1960s, there became a rapid change to distributing Holy Communion under both kinds in around the world, but especially here in the United States. So that was new and different, but it was permitted, and the church said that this is okay, and it's customary now. Most people became very used to it. But with COVID, that all stopped for obvious reasons, because if you can communicate this COVID germ, then it's just bad health policy for people to be consuming this liquid from the same cup that hasn't been sanitized. It's properly known as a chalice, by the way. And so for that practical reason, the church said, we're not going to do that anymore. Now, I don't know what the future holds, but my guess is that, first of all, people's level of concern has ratcheted way up now because of COVID, not to mention any other kinds of possible communicable diseases that could be spread that way. So it may be that you will not see a return to distributing Holy Communion under both kinds anytime soon, or maybe never, depending on how things go. I mean, who knows what the next scare is going to be when it comes to a virus of some sort. We just don't know. So what I would suggest is what you're seeing at Mass, Tracy, is the way Mass used to be before Vatican II. It was just standard to be that way. Now, one little footnote, if you don't mind, a longer answer here, and that is that in the Eastern churches, and this would also extend to those churches that are separated from the Catholic Church, we call those the Orthodox churches. They broke away from the Catholic Church in the 11th century. But let's talk about the Eastern rites within the Catholic Church. So let's talk about, let's say, the Byzantine rite. They receive routinely under both kinds, but they receive in a different way. So at their divine liturgy, which is what they call the Mass, the priest at the altar, he combines the bread that is used at the divine liturgy with the wine that is used, and both become the body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Holy Eucharist, and they're mixed together in the chalice. And when you go to Holy Communion at an Eastern Rite church, the priest or the deacon would spoon into your mouth the combined, you know, the Eucharistic bread and the precious blood. And so that gets spooned into your mouth. You never handle it. You never touch it. That's never done in those churches. So if you ever get a chance to attend a Byzantine rite liturgy, that's what you're going to see. Now, you obviously don't want to go to communion until you're Catholic, but when the time comes, then you can go to communion that way as well. Now, they have not stopped doing that, even though COVID, of course, posed some problems. They continue to distribute communion the same way. So if you want to see what that's like, even if you're just observing it as a non-Catholic, you can go to a Byzantine parish and see it done there. Does that clarify it a bit more?
Absolutely, yes. Thanks for that complete explanation. I appreciate it. Helped me understand.
You're most welcome. Hey, I'd like to recommend a book to you, Tracy, as long as you're on the journey. It's called Surprised by Truth. And it's a collection of conversion stories that I edited, and it's about men and women who were on the same journey that you're on now, and they talk about what their experience was like. So if you get a chance, you might want to read that book. I think it'll be helpful.
Absolutely. Real quick, you always have great book suggestions. I was recently up in Estes Park at St. Malo's, and St. John Paul II had visited when he was out here for World Youth Day, and so I picked up a medallion there and had it blessed by the local priest up in Estes Park.
Nice.
And what's a good source for some of St. John Paul's writings and teachings that would be kind of an easy to read for somebody like not too steeped in research, but just a good, easy resource for me to read some of his teachings?
Well, he wrote voluminously, number one, so there's a lot there. But he also wrote in a very, I would say, he tended to be less accessible, let's say. Doesn't mean that it's inaccessible. It's just not as easy to read some of his commentary because it was so deep. And being a philosopher himself, you know, he brought a lot of that world into his writings. So my advice would be, do this. Go to your local Catholic bookstore. I'm sure you've got at least one or two in the greater Denver area. And ask them, what books do you have by Pope John Paul II? So you may have The Jeweler's Shop, which was a play that he wrote when he was, I think he was still a priest at that time. Love and Responsibility, which is a treatise on marriage. And it also has to do more specifically with the theology of the body. You may have heard that. And he wrote, he gave actually speeches that were later turned into books. He talked a lot more about the theology of the body, but Love and Responsibility would be a good example, kind of in a more condensed form. If you go to the Vatican website, vatican.va, you have to put in the W's for some reason, www.vatican.va, go to the page for Pope John Paul II, and they'll have his encyclical letters there in a variety of languages. So for free, you can just start delving into what did he say about life issues? What did he say about truth? What did he say about the East and the West in terms of the churches? What did he say about faith and reason? They're all there, and that's a very accessible way to reach those things without having to spend any money. So I'll give you those suggestions for now, Tracy, but do keep listening, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Patrick. Have a blessed day.
You too. Sounds like you are either on or near a highway, so stay safe on the roads today. Let's go to Robert now in Arcata, California. Hello, Robert.
Good morning, Patrick. Yeah, I have a question about bishops and getting married and stuff. I don't want to be contentious or anything, but it just seems like when I read the Bible, Peter was married. Timothy gave bishops that they need to be a man with one wife. And this is something that the church taught for 1,000 years, and all of a sudden the church doesn't teach that anymore. So, and God set up the church that way. So where did the church get the authority to change that?
That's a great question. Excellent question. Okay, so I'll answer it this way. Number one, to answer your last question, to the extent that the church has authority, it received that authority from Jesus. So you see examples of that, Matthew chapter 16. Verse 18, that whole section, verses 16 through 20, you want to read that. There we see Jesus giving a special authority to Simon Peter individually. Whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. This is in the context of saying, I'm going to give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And that it's an echo, you might say, of Isaiah chapter 23, where there's a description there of the authority that's invested in the prime minister, the major domo, the second in command, to the king. He doesn't have the king's authority, but it's a delegated authority that the king gives to this major domo. And we read about this in that passage. So what Jesus said to Peter individually in Matthew 16 is redolent of that grant of authority and the symbol of the key and a certain vestment that he wore as a symbol of his authority. It wasn't his authority. He was exercising that authority in the name of the king as his vice regent, you might say. We see it again in Matthew chapter 18, in verse 18, where Jesus says the same thing. But now to all the apostles, the 12 together, he says, whatever you as a group, not as a group, but individually, but he's speaking to the group. He says, whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. Now, there's a collegial dimension to that binding and loosing, to be sure. They don't individually have that power the way the Pope does, Simon Peter being the first Pope. We see in Luke 10:16 where Jesus says, whoever listens to you, listens to me. Whoever rejects you, rejects me. We see in Matthew chapter 28 in the Great Commission, 19 and 20, where Jesus says to go into the whole world and make disciples of all nations and baptize them and teach them all that I have commanded you. So we could multiply these Bible verses, Robert, but since you asked such a very good question, it deserves several there to show that the authority that the church has is not its own authority. It's a delegated authority given to it by the Lord. and perpetuated down through the ages. So what about these bishops? You're absolutely right. We know that Simon Peter's wife, or I'm sorry, mother-in-law, was suffering from a fever because Jesus healed her of her fever. So it's clear that Simon Peter was married, no doubt about it. But notice that in the gospel accounts, we're told repeatedly that when Jesus called these men, Peter, James, John, Andrew, etc., what we're told is they left everything. They left their fishing business, in the case of Peter and John and James. They, presumably at least, they left their wives, they left their children, they left their livelihood. They left life as they knew it behind. They didn't remain married in the fashion that I'm married. I live with my wife. I sleep in the same bed with her. We sit at the same table and eat the same food. We live our lives together as a married couple. They didn't do that anymore. They left everything to follow Jesus. Now, it doesn't mean that that there couldn't be, obviously, a married bishop, because we see in Scripture that there were. So your point about that is absolutely correct. This is not a doctrine. That's something else to remember. This is not the church's doctrine. This is a custom, or more specifically, it's a discipline. And the discipline arose over time as the church reflected upon, well, what does it mean to be a bishop, an episcopos, an overseer? What does that mean exactly? And what connotations does that have as the good shepherd, patterning oneself after Jesus? And this would be true to a lesser extent of the priesthood as well. And over time, this discipline grew as the ideal, because the idea here was to be single-minded. And just as Jesus did not have a wife that he went home to every night, you know, think about that. What would it have been like for the rest of us if Jesus had gotten married and had children? He would have a unique relationship, unlike his relationship with anyone else, with his wife. He would have had a unique relationship as father, unlike any other relationship with anyone else, with his children. So that would have introduced an exclusivity within the otherwise universal availability of Jesus. Jesus, as an unmarried man, was universally available to everybody at all times. And if he had chosen to marry, and if he had chosen to have children, I mean, he didn't, obviously, but if he had, it would have radically altered the way in which Jesus is universally available to all of us, without excluding anybody, without any kind of special relationship like he would have had with his wife. So part of the church's reflection on this issue, this deep scriptural and theological reflection and prayer and insight, gave rise to this discipline that the ideal way to be the good shepherd in the pattern of Jesus, the good shepherd, is to be universally available, to be celibate. Now, celibate is different from what many people think. Celibate means unmarried. Continent means no sexual activity. You can be married and continent, not having any sexual activity. You can be celibate and incontinent. And I'm not talking about bladder control here. So the church's discipline found its way to say it's a better way. As Jesus himself said in Matthew chapter 19, he said, there are some who are eunuchs from birth. There are those who are eunuchs because they've been made so by others. That's referring to castration. And there are some who are eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. He says, this is not for everybody, but for those to whom it is given, they should accept it. So there he's referring to consecrated celibacy for the sake of the kingdom. And Jesus himself said that there is a role for this, and those to whom this is given should accept it. And so that's where this development took place in the church's discipline, so that we see that over time, collectively, the church realized this is a better way for bishops to do the ministry of bishops, and to the same extent, or to, at least to some extent, for priests as well, because there was married clergy in the early church as well, married priests. So that's, you might say, kind of a quickie overview. Now, if you want to read a book that will delve deeply into the documentary evidence, the historical data, the records, so to speak, in the early church, I would read a book called The Apostolic Origins of Priestly Celibacy. The Apostolic Origins of Priestly Celibacy. I forget the author's first name. Colchini is his last name, Colchini, I believe it is. It's published by Ignatius Press, and it's one of a few books in this genre, but it is an historical overview that gives you the documentary evidence. So if you want to see, like, how prevalent was it in the 3rd, 4th, 5th century for there to be married bishops, what you'll find is it actually was not prevalent at all. It happened. There were some married bishops, to be sure. There were certainly some married priests, but the ideal of priestly celibacy became more pronounced rather early, and it became the norm a lot earlier than people realize. So I realize I've given you a long answer to an excellent question, Robert. I'm really glad you called in because it gives an opportunity to kind of dust off something that we haven't talked about much. That's the book I'd suggest, and if you're interested, I think Catholic Answers might even have some materials on this topic there. Their website is Catholic.com. I've got to take a break, though. I'll be right back right after this. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show. And in about a little less than 1 hour from now, we're going to have that celebrity match about the Inquisition book that I wrote. It's brand new. It's free. You can get your copy by going to relevantradio.com/quiz. It's a free book, and I mean free. You don't pay for anything. relevantradio.com/quiz. And joining me in about 50 minutes will be Josh Raymond and Cale Clark, and they're going to duke it out. It's the final countdown.
The final countdown.
All right. That's the music of competition right there. And we're going to have some of that competition about 45, 46 minutes from now. Josh Raymond, who runs the Inner Life program, the one that follows mine immediately after mine, he is going to be squaring off with Cale Clark, who is the, what do they call him, Canadian kid? Something like that?
These guys are getting nervous, Patrick. Bacon. They're getting nervous. Josh is here. He's pacing the hallways. He's got your book in hand.
Cramming.
He's cramming.
And I think now Cale is in the meatpacking plant punching away at the slabs of beef that are hanging. It's going to happen in about 45 minutes. They're going to be in battle mode. They're going to see who's going to outdo the other for this quiz book championship we're doing. And that is referring to my new book called Inquisition, Q&A for the Curious Catholic and the Catholic Curious. Fun and factual faith formation, because the more you know, the more you grow. So I'm going to be asking them some questions from this book. Now, not to be leaving you out, you can get a free copy of this book, Inquisition. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com/quiz, relevantradio.com/quiz, and say, here's my name, here's my address. That's it. You don't pay anything. You don't get out your credit card. You don't put in any numbers. You just tell us where to send your free book. No shipping, no handling, no salesman will call, no strings attached. It's yours. If you're listening in Canada, you can do the same thing. If you have loved ones in the military, you can send them a free copy of this book, or just let them know, send them the link, relevantradio.com/quiz. Send it to your son who's in Korea or Japan or Germany or wherever he is, or your daughter or your husband or your wife who's overseas. Send them the link. Text them the link. relevantradio.com/quiz, and they can sign up and they will get their free copy of the book through the APO-FPO system that the U.S. military has set up. It's great, and it's free, which is the best part about it. Cyrus, you told me earlier today that you were chuckling as you were reading through some of these quizzes. I liked how you put it. You said it's like the book version of the show.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. I'm smiling just as I'm flipping through it right now. A lot of the wrong answers,
so
I'm guessing they're the wrong answers, are pretty
Some of
funny.
Them are obviously wrong.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll read
it.
A couple of those that I, you know, and here's the thing, Cyrus, and this is what I'm gratified for people who are responding so, because the book just came out a week ago, and they're responding so enthusiastically, which makes me happy, of course. Is that they're having fun with it and their understanding is being enhanced. So some things that you thought were one way and you look and you find, oh, it's actually a different answer. It's different from what I thought it was. Or if you, maybe you know something and you want to have that reinforced. Oh, I got that one. I know that one. That's good. That's a good feeling. And then there are all kinds of things that maybe you had no idea. You're not even sure, you know, about something. And it's, this book is going to add in lots of information for you. So I think people are going to enjoy it. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Let's go now to Marilyn in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning, Patrick. I'm one of the lucky people waiting for your book. And my question is about our parish. Our parish is getting many requests from elderly shut-in people who would like to get communion delivered to their house. Mm-hmm. And I would happily like to comply with that and deliver communion to these people, but I'm having a few kind of questions because not only would I have to touch the host, and I have gotten communion in the hand, but I prefer to get the communion on the tongue when I get a chance. But then I'm handing these people communion, and I don't know whether they're in the state of grace. And the pastor will be teaching us how to do this. But what do you think about people delivering communion to parishioners?
I think it's a wonderful thing. I think it's when it's necessary, and the priest, of course, he can't be everywhere. He's got limitations on his time and ability to get to help as many people as he can. And so if it's necessary for him to delegate this ministry to you as a lay person, sometimes that is necessary. Now, it's not ideal for lay people to be handling the Holy Eucharist, and that should be said. The priest's hands are consecrated at his ordination for this very purpose. My hands are not consecrated for this, nor are yours. And as lay people, it's not really proper for us to do this, but there are times when it's necessary. So a catechist distributing Holy Communion in some remote village, because there's no priest for 6 months out of the year, and in the meantime, the people want to receive Holy Communion, so the bishop can delegate that authority to the layman who is the catechist, as an example. So in this case, my advice to you would be, if, you know, check with the priest, but I'm pretty sure he's going to say yes. I mean, if I were him, I would certainly say yes. When you go to distribute Holy Communion, let the person know that Holy Communion is, I'm bringing Holy Communion, and to be properly disposed to receive Holy Communion, you have to be, if you're aware of any serious sins, you need to go to confession. And if you're not aware of any serious sins and you're Catholic, and you're ready to go to communion, then this is for you. But to do a little bit of gentle catechesis when you're there is a good thing. And maybe the person would say, oh, well, gosh, it's been 30 years since my last confession, and I don't really, maybe I do have some serious sins. And you could say, well, how about this? Why don't I have Father McGillicuddy come and visit you and hear your confession, and then I'll be right back, and I'll give you Holy Communion. You could do that. That's one way to handle it. But, you know, ultimately, it's not for you to know. You don't have to know, and it's not really for you to know the state of the soul of the person. Unless it's a notorious, public, scandalous kind of sin, that's a different story. But if you're visiting a grandmother in the nursing home, you can assume good faith on her part. But a little bit of instruction would be helpful, I think.
Oh, I feel much better about it. Thank you. I will go forward with this and meet with the priest and start delivering communion to people that request this.
You're doing something good, and I'm sure that the Lord will bless you for that. And obviously it goes without saying, be extremely reverent with the Eucharist. Don't take the Eucharist home with you. Don't, you know, put the Lord on the top of the microwave oven while you're getting ready for the day or anything like that. This is an extremely unique privilege of being able to bring the Lord with you. For a lay person, it's extremely unique, and we have to take it very seriously. And I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. Thank you, Marilyn. I appreciate that. 888-914-9149. How about Colleen now in Milwaukee? Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning. So my question was about so I go to Mass with my to-be spouse, but he does not go to receive the Eucharist because he was brought up Lutheran and does not believe that is the full body and blood of Christ. And I think he is feeling somewhat alienated, and you kind of talked about it earlier on today's show that maybe that's why they started allowing or encouraging people to come up with their crossed arms for a blessing. Right. I recently spoke to a family friend who is also a priest, and he mentioned that the alienation that my spouse may be, or to-be spouse may be struggling with, a suggestion to him or sort of a perspective to him given to him was that John Paul had actually handed out communion to people who he did not. He basically at the end of it, he said, I may have just given out a lot of first communions. And the priest that I was speaking with said, well, you know, if you get to the point where you do believe that this is the body and blood of Christ, you are welcome to come up. And I think that maybe my to-be spouse may have found some, maybe the things are kind of put back in his court where he wasn't being told, you're an outsider, you can't come up and do this, you don't believe, so therefore you don't get to participate in the Eucharist. But what this priest was telling me, well, Liz, no, it's more of we're not wanting to deny anybody the Eucharist. It's just that we want when you come up to receive, it's not even that what we want, it's that you need to choose if this is something you fully believe, and if it is, come up and receive. And that was sort of shocking to me because obviously there's no formation that really happens, like, you know, before that. And you know, my fiance did say, well, I would like to go through the formation before something like that would happen. It's just, I'm still struggling with this alienation and I want to fully participate and be there. I just haven't quite gotten to the point where I feel comfortable doing that. What would your reaction be to someone who's really struggling, wanting to fully participate, feels sort of alienated, and experiences that pain and almost puts him on the defensive and, well, why are you rejecting me?
Here's my thought. I'm sure your husband's a fine guy, so this is not intended to suggest anything otherwise. But there is a bit of a woe is me aspect to all this, if you ask me, Colleen. In other words, woe is me. I can't receive communion. I feel rejected. People don't like me. You know, my advice would be shake that off. Because this is an invitation. This is an open door. This is a door that has been opened before you. It's an invitation to come into the Catholic Church. It's an invitation to receive the fullness of everything that Christ wants to give you. And this is an opportunity for you to have it all. So shake off this woe is me and I feel alienated and, you know, just... That's not the right attitude, if you ask me. That's kind of wallowing in a sort of self-pity that's inappropriate. My thought would be, if I were in his position, if I believe this really is Jesus Christ, and I know that, and I don't believe I'm getting it at the Lutheran church that I attend, and by the way, you're not, because they don't have valid holy orders, therefore it's not a valid Eucharist. If I really did believe this, why would I not become Catholic? I mean, that's the whole point of it. To be in full communion means to be able to receive not just Holy Communion, but all the sacraments. I mean, I'm sure he's been baptized. So he would also receive confirmation. He would receive our Lord in Holy Communion. All the things that accrue to you when you become fully immersed in the Catholic faith, and that's where Jesus wants you in any case. So it seems like that's the appropriate reaction to recognizing that the Lord is truly present in the Holy Eucharist. Do what you need to do to receive it. It's as simple as that. You know, it's like if you have, let's say you're talking to your son, you have a natural aptitude for sports. You'd be a really good athlete. Well, what, I mean, you could be mopey and say, well, the coach never picks me and how come I didn't make the team. And all. Well, you could if you got out there and practiced. If you did what you need to do to be a good athlete, you'd be a good athlete. And in the same way, if you did what you need to do to receive Jesus in Holy Communion, you could receive him in Holy Communion. It's, do you see what I'm saying? And I'm not trying to say it in a harsh way, but sometimes people need to hear it in a direct way. And I think that's what he might need
to hear. I do. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that he comes from background where he can actually appreciate that. So more instead of fight back. So that is actually very helpful. And sort of one of my responses to him was, well, you know, maybe when I first received communion for a long time, I didn't quite understand what it was that I was receiving. And I look back on that a little bit too. And I'm like, well, shoot, I didn't understand. I wonder if when he first receives, he didn't understand or he doesn't understand. And is that okay? And it starts to get muddy. Obviously, we're both adults now and we can choose a little bit more. Right. With more information. But no, I think this is great. I think this is something to share with him and hopefully helps him look at this as something that's a little bit more really about him and his relationship with God and less about what other people are telling him to or to not do.
Right.
So yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And I say everything, and I hope it comes across this way, as an encouragement to him, because all those treasures are his for the taking. He just has to do what he needs to do. And, you know, one of the things that's true about receiving Holy Communion is in the new rite of the Mass, in any case, when you receive Holy Communion, you say amen. And that is the equivalent of like swearing to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in a courtroom with your hand on the Bible. You're making a public testimony that you are in communion, not only with Jesus, not only that you believe this is really him, but it's swearing an oath that you are in communion with his church. And it winds up being a form of perjury. In a sense, if somebody goes forward who is not Catholic and says amen, publicly testifying to something that's not actually true. He may believe this is really the Lord in the Eucharist, but if he's not in union with the church, it's kind of a form of perjury. So it's another way to look at it. You might want to get him that book of conversions of former Lutheran ministers who became Catholic. It's called There We Stood, Here We Stand. There We Stood, Here We Stand by Tim Drake. Thanks, Colleen.